Hi, you're listening to Hungry Magazine from Chicago, Illinois, and my name is Mike Nagrant.
4, 3, 2, 1
more time. This week I was in Cleveland. I had an opportunity to sit down with Chef Michael Simon of Lolita Restaurant, the soon-to-reopen Lola, as well as Paella in New York City. I first read about Chef Simon in Michael Rollman's book Soul of a Chef. Lola was one of the first gourmet restaurants I ate at when I started to get serious about food. Chef Simon calls upon his heritage for culinary inspiration, using his father's pierogi recipe to make crab-stuffed pierogies, or his mother's Greek heritage in creating Mediterranean-inspired cuisine at Lolita. Chef Simon has also appeared on the Food Network many times, including an Iron Chef asparagus battle against Morimoto. I started out by asking Chef Simon about the meats he's curing at Lolita.
We cure all our own meats here in Saluni, so we always have like 4 or 5 different... 4 to 8 different cured meats that we do on the menu. So a lot of salting and drying.
Yeah.
So that's what he was referring to. So, there's not a lot of places in the country that do it. So we're probably the only restaurant in the country here, and then Paella in New York, that actually do Greek-style cured meats. Most of even the places that do them in-house typically do Italian stuff. So we're real excited about that. And it's fun. We always try to get back to the history of food. So, you know, whenever you could take something that's thousands of years old in origin and then do it when no one else does is a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's a guy, you probably know Paul Kahn.
He's one of my best friends in the business.
Yeah, I'm actually having dinner with him first week in April to do one of these.
Nice.
And he's actually... He's probably my favorite chef in Chicago.
He's the best. He's done 2 chef dinners here.
Yeah.
You know, we've had him in town to do dinners.
Yeah, I know.
Here.
I saw the beard. Had him. And but Paul's another good friend of Paul's is Paul Virant. He owns V in Western Springs.
Okay.
And Paul Virant, like, they've been doing a lot of curing in house there. They've been making like merguez, and they've been doing. Just all kinds of stuff. They were actually working on a prosciutto, in some guy's wine cellar in his basement, which they couldn't serve in the restaurant because of food standards.
Right.
But they were just doing it to do it, which it's good. I'm glad more people are doing it.
Yeah, it's fun. We've done some prosciuttos. They're hard. It's 18 months, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long cure time. We do lamb prosciutto, but we break it down a little bit more. It's a, in Greece, it's called hieromi, so we break down the leg of lamb and then cure it. So, but it's incredible.
So I know you started out at Geppetto's.
Yep.
Pizza and ribs. Do you remember those days? Do you remember what that was like?
Yeah, I mean, I was 15, 16, so it was fun though. It's what got me started in the restaurant business. You know, I love the rush of it and the speed of it and. And at that time there was only one store, and then they did everything from scratch, and it was cool.
Did you ever have a sense at that time that you wanted to open a restaurant?
Yeah, I mean, I would say about my second year there, I started saying this is something that I really want to pursue, and at that time there was no Food Network, there were only a couple culinary schools,
right.
So. It was different back then. My dad was like, "Oh my God, you want to take a blue collar job? He's got more degrees than a thermometer, and I got to take him. He's gonna have a chef, But I went to culinary school, about a year after high school.
And you went to CIA, right?
Mm-hmm.
You probably get asked this question a lot, but I'm always curious how chefs feel about it. Do you think that's important for a chef, or do you think you can get an apprenticeship on the line?
I think you could do it both ways. I mean, I think you could, in the end result, I don't think it's going to make you a better chef one way or the other. The people that have the passion to succeed and the work ethic to succeed are going to succeed,
Mm-hmm.
But it does, it gives you a great foundation. It maybe speeds up the process a little bit. But then still, you still gotta be one of those people with a lot of drive and stuff to be successful in this business. I mean, Paul Kahn, no culinary training.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Keller.
Mm-hmm.
No culinary training, you know.
Charlie Trotter, same thing.
Yeah.
A lot of the, you know, I was talking to, I don't know if you had a chance to eat at Modo in Chicago.
I haven't.
But I don't know if you, are you aware of it at
yeah.
all? Yeah. And I was talking to their pastry chef who, he went to culinary school, but he didn't really go for pastry, really didn't focus on it, didn't really know anything about pastry except that, you know, he got hired in at the spot. And, you know, I think the thing he said to me, which I thought was interesting, is that if you don't know what the rules are, you're not worried about breaking them.
Right.
You just, you know, you go ahead and you forge ahead. So, you know, now they're doing like sous vide, like bread pudding and stuff. And,
right.
You know, that's something you might not do because you're reluctant because you've already been taught.
Yeah, you're more classically trained. And but I think sometimes it's that way too with like, I've never had a quote unquote mentor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of the same thought process. It really allowed me to develop my own style without recreating someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
So I think school's good because it gives you the really good foundation. You know, in my opinion, the great chefs, you know, the thing that make the great chefs great is one, they have impeccable technique. Two, their focus on product, and then three, their just drive, you know, and their willingness to really push themselves and work exceptionally hard. And, you know, those are the ones that succeed, whether they went to school or they didn't go to school. I think the good part of schools is it gives you that true foundation. To make great food, you need great technique. You know, I can't be convinced otherwise of that. It's like people could take chances and do different things and, you know, break rules that they didn't know existed, but they still have good technique.
Mm-hmm.
Both people do, you know.
Do you feel that there was anything, I mean, obviously you're very successful, so it's like, you know, there's no regrets or anything like that, but do you think that you missed having a mentor? Is there something there that you didn't feel you got? Or
no, I mean, there were times where I regretted it a little bit. Like, I had an opportunity to work at French Laundry right when it opened and passed it up. So there were some regrets I had there initially, especially when, you
yeah.
know, Thomas had the success that he had.
Yeah.
But, you know, long term, there's not. I'm very comfortable in my own skin, you know, very comfortable cooking the way that I want to cook. I think long term it worked out better for me not having a mentor, you know, in that sense. There were people that really taught me a lot about food, but, you know, not like a definitive style. I see a lot of chefs that come out of French Laundry now that all are, that, you know, they're kind of, you know, Thomas has a strong will, so the chefs cook very similar to him, or Trotter, or, you know, you could go on and on and on and on.
Were you ever worried about, like, I think it's every time I drive to Tremont, you know, you're going across the bridge or a bridge, and I would think if I were opening a restaurant here, like, you know, when you did, I'd be worried that, like, people are going to come across the bridge to come to my restaurant.
Yeah, we didn't know better, man.
Did you guys think about that?
Yeah, we didn't know better. We were the first fine dining restaurant in the neighborhood, so we didn't have a lot of money. I mean, everything we had was invested into the restaurant. I had lived in the neighborhood since 90,
mm-hmm.
so I was pretty comfortable with the neighborhood and felt, you know, I just felt the direction that it was going to eventually take, and especially coming from New York and living in New York, you see how quickly neighborhoods could turn around. Not that Cleveland neighborhood would ever turn around that quick, but we were comfortable that it would. Liz and I loved the neighborhood. Felt there was great growth potential in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of it was just an experience and absolutely no fear of failing. We had nothing to lose. When you
mm-hmm.
have nothing to lose, you're dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
you know, you're fearless. You do what you have to
do. I had no fear. I mean, I had a fear of failing, but not a fear of I mean, I had nothing for them to take. Were they going to take my rusted out Jeep and my little crappy house? You know, I mean, there was nothing for them to take. So, you know, we were willing to take risks, I think, that a lot of people weren't. The neighborhood worked for us because we could afford the neighborhood, mm-hmm. or we couldn't afford to do something downtown. Mm-hmm. We had a good reputation as chefs, as I myself as a chef and Liz as a sommelier, but not to the point where you know, people were giving us $1 million to open a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. You're famous for, well, famous, I don't know, but you're definitely noted for somebody who's able to keep folks around. Like, I know, you know, I think Frank has been with you for a long time.
14 years.
Yeah, and Doug and, you know, these guys. And this is an industry that's notorious for turnover. I mean, it was actually funny when I was at Michael Roman's house today. Thomas Keller called him, actually, which he said Thomas was just talking about staff issues because, you know, it's even tough for a guy like Thomas to find really good people.
Right.
What do you think, you know, you're doing here? I mean, I've read Soul of the Chef, and I know you talked a lot about the family atmosphere and things like that. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
I think that's it. I mean, we you know, we treat our staff how we want to be treated. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's... You know, Liz coddles him a lot, so I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. I'm more the bad cop.
Yeah.
But even in that sense, I'm not like a yeller, screamer in your face. You know, people that work for us know what we expect. You know, we talk to them like they're people. We help them when they have problems outside of the restaurant, which gets us in trouble sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. Sometimes you get, you know... Sometimes we're too close, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Because when something goes wrong with a staff member, it affects us like it would affect the family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if a lot of restaurateurs are willing to do that or want to do that, but it's just how we like to do business, and it works well for us.
Thank you very much.
I have a little more, or a little sum. A little sum. Can I have a little sum more?
That's the trademark laugh.
Yeah, right, the cackle.
I think it's funny because everybody always writes about that with you. Does that make you more self-conscious about
no,
that?
No, not at all.
No?
No, you know, I've been laughing like this way since I've been bored, so it's like I don't even think about it.
So Lola,
mm-hmm.
You guys are shooting for May on that?
Yep, May, and we should hit it.
Is that, what are you guys going to do? Is it going to be similar to how it was, or are you kind of... Are you retooling the food at all?
A little bit. I mean, we're
the mac and cheese is still going to be there. And
no, I'm gonna have the mac and cheese on the menu here.
Okay.
Yeah, I just think it fits the neighborhood better. You know, we're letting Lola grow up a little bit, so to speak. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the theory, the concept behind the food will be the same, but you know, we're gonna have a really laid out kitchen, which is gonna allow us to do some things that we couldn't do prior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the food will be a little bit more, you know, I think refined. And I mean, it grew here. It continued to grow and get more refined from year to month to month, year to year, mm-hmm. you know. And I just think it'll continue down that path. You know, we're going to be able to have a bigger wine selection.
I heard you guys are going to do a kitchen table.
We're going to have a kitchen table.
Is that, you think... Will that be more intimidating to you as a chef, or do
I
you
don't
think?
So. Oh, for me?
Yeah.
No.
No, because you're...
No, I mean, I connect with the customers pretty
yeah.
good, and, you know, it'll be nice. They come up, we can talk to them, see if they want to eat, and just cook for them.
Yeah.
You know? Which is what it's all about anyhow. It's about making people happy, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why Blackbird and Beck are great restaurants. There's no pretension there. There's no bullshit.
It's just a good place to hang out.
Great food,
taken care
with
of.
Friendly people, and, you know... And we've always been that same way, and we'll continue to be that way downtown. It's like people, I think, expect us a lot of times to be pretentious, and they're always like, everyone's so friendly here. It's like, why wouldn't they be? You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think your roots are in this city and this neighborhood, and you are Cleveland, you know, in many ways. And, you know, I think a lot of restaurateurs will come from out of town, or they were reared in New York or some brash lifestyle, and I think that's what people are used to seeing.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I just, for me, it's about, you know, making great food, having fun, making sure the customers are having fun. And
So I know you did a lot of, I mean, I always joke that you've done more for the pierogi than my grandmother, you know, and certainly more for macaroni and cheese than Kraft. And what's kind of the evolution of your cooking now? I mean, I know you're doing some Mediterranean, and you're doing
you know, some of the Greek. Where does that come from? You know, I know the pierogies came from your dad.
Yeah, and this comes from my mom.
Yeah?
My mom is Greek and Sicilian. So it's kind of like Lola was, an ode to my father, and Lolita's more of a tribute to my mother kind of thing. But it's, you know, it's just kind of food that I grew up eating. And, I mean, that's always what I've done. I've done food that I'm comfortable with and that is... you know, a part of me from my heritage, and I think it makes it more pure. And you know, I'm not reaching. It's like this was my childhood. You know,
yeah.
here's like the really refined version of what I ate as a kid, kind of thing.
So were you making like spanakopita with your mom and growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I actually grew up more on Greek food than any other food.
Yeah. Because
my mom did most of the cooking and her father was Greek, and you know, so that's we ate a lot of that growing up. My dad's side of the family was the pierogies and that kind of stuff. And that kind of stuff too. It was a lot of the Lola cuisine is like a tribute to Cleveland. Kinda mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I have always tried to take dishes that are like Cleveland standards and have fun with them. Like on the new menu there'll be a foie gras bratwurst.
Nice.
Stuff like that. So, and I actually did that in that same, I did a dinner true last year I think it was, with Paul and me and Rick. And my meal was called, my course was called A Picnic in Cleveland, and
nice.
It was a foie gras bratwurst, homemade stadium mustard, and Great Lakes beer soup.
Nice.
You know, so.
Have you, did you get the hot dogs at all when you were in Chicago? I don't know if you even heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he does the foie gras dog, and he's actually been doing a Euro dog, too. So, you know, he's doing all kinds of crazy stuff, and I love him because here's a guy who went to culinary school, but he turned it around and went the other way, you
right.
know. And, you know, I think we were talking about Masa in New York and how, you know, it's, you know, and he's a master at what he does, and there's no question it's worth it, but at the same time, that's out of reach for a lot of people.
Yeah, for 99% of America.
You know, and it's and so it's like, you'd like to see more, and I know, you know, you've worked so hard, and you it's expensive, it's an expensive proposition to make this kind of food, but... You know, there's a guy in Portland, Michael Heberoy, I don't know if you... I know he's doing, like, three-course prefix meals for, like, 30, 40 bucks, which I think is kind of interesting. And, you know, it's just good to see chefs, I think, do those kind of things. And
yeah,
I mean,
we do
I think you're doing that with Lolita. I mean,
we do a three-course here for 35.
See, that's great.
You know, and it makes it approachable for people. And, you know, and that's what we wanted to do here. We wanted to make it a little, like, the same... level of food like Evola, but a little bit more, you know, affordable for people to come to every day. And that's, you know, that's why we don't do as much with foie gras and truffles and caviars, and we do a lot of braises and you know, those kind of cuts of meats. And you know, it's, fortunately it's working really well. So
I'm curious about local purveyors. I mean, I would guess, I know I remember you used to use Ohio City for some of your pasta and things like that, and Ohio pasta.
Yeah.
And I would guess maybe you use the market.
A little bit. We use the market. We use Urban Herbs at the West Side Market. And we use a lot of farmers. I mean, we're very farm, like, pretty soon we'll be using Muddy Fork Farms for all of our asparagus. We use Kilbuck Valley for our own mushrooms. We have a local chicken guy that we use.
Is there anybody that's just really exciting that you've been working with?
Yeah, they all are, because they're farmers, man. They're cool. You
yeah.
know, we get all our lamb out of Pennsylvania, Jamison Farms.
Okay, of course.
But the chicken guy's great. We use Curly Tail Farms for some of our pork. They do a bunch of heirloom hogs. And they can't supply us constantly, so then we get the rest of our hogs from Heritage Farms USA out of New York, and they're exciting because they work directly with these little farmers that do heirloom breeds of hog. So you know, we just try to practice sustainable cuisine as good as we can, and you know, work as closely with the farmers as we can.
In the soul of a chef, I think there was some mention about you had the James Beard American Cookery around all the time,
yeah.
the book. Is that something you still have?
Yeah, absolutely. I always refer back to
it. What does James Beard mean to you? I mean,
Well, to me, I mean, he kind of symbolizes American food. There was never a pretension to what he did. He was a fabulous teacher, and just embraced food and wine and the spirit of food and wine, you know. So to me, that's what he is. He's just like a big, like when I read his recipes and look at his books and stuff, just a big loving guy that embraced food and wine, you know, and took a lot of the pretension out of it. And you know, that's what we're always looking to do. I just hate when it becomes this pretentious bullshit. We treat the restaurant like you're coming over to my house for dinner. Mm-hmm. Like, let's have fun. It's a party. Hope everybody enjoys everything. And you know, you want to take the pretension out and the intimidation factor out, not build it in.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way you're going to expose people to good food.
Right.
I mean, I think if you're pretentious, you know, they're going to continue to go to like Olive Garden and P.F. Chang's. And,
right.
You know, and this way, you know, you make the prices accessible, you give them the value, and you make it easy so that they don't freak out when they come in. And,
right.
Yeah. Have you seen a shift in your audience in terms of people coming into Lolita? I know, I'm sure a lot of the same regulars are going to come by, but
yeah, it's a little younger clientele at Lolita, I think, than it was at Lola, a little broader. But we've always got like a really crazy diverse clientele. Like I remember the first year Lola was open, I look up on the platform and Trent Reznor sitting next to Dick Jacobs, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's perfect. That's just what I want. You know what I mean? Like, get both extremes, you know.
Did Trent order his meat extra bloody?
You know, so it was like, it's kind of always been that way where we get a very diverse crowd. This crowd's a little younger, later, like, you know, it's like on a Friday night at Lola, it would get busy at 6 and start winding down at 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it gets busy at 7 and winds down at midnight. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I think we have gotten a little younger crowd than the Lola crowd.
So I know you're a big golfer.
I try to be. I attempt to be.
You look good on the, you did that thing in Scottsdale with Bobby Flay.
Oh, yeah, Bobby and I did that thing.
TV makes you look like a good, you look yeah. Your swing look good. Are you a TV watching golfer, or are you just a golfer?
No, I do. I watch it on TV. It's a good way to wind down on Sundays.
Yeah.
You know?
Are you a Tiger Woods guy, or are you?
Yeah, I like Tiger. I mean, I just like golf. I do like Tiger, though. I mean, he's kind of our generation of golfer, so for me, he's fun to watch.
The thing I love about Tiger is his like pursuit of, you know, he's only competing against himself, which
right.
I think probably a good chef. You know, it has to be within you. You can't, you know, expect, you know, you're going to change, or you got to be that way all the time. And I just love that in Tiger.
Oh yeah, and he's just a great competitor. You know, he's just a great, just a disdain for losing. And yeah, I love those kind of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's good for that. Sundays, like, you know, like this Sunday when the weather will be nice. It's like 3 hours on the Harley, on the couch, watch golf.
Nice. Where do you like to bike?
I go all over the place. We live on the Metro Park, so, you know, I just kind of zip everywhere.
How's it like, I mean, family's always a stress thing a little bit. And I mean, I'm sure you and Liz have a great working relationship, but, you know, how's that dynamic for you guys?
It works. It always, you know, we worked together before we dated, so I mean, we never fight at work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and she's front of the house, I'm back of the house, so there's never like that there's some overlapping, but not a lot, and, you know, our working relationship has always been great.
Yeah.
You know?
What does she bring to the front of the house that...
Well, she brings all the wine knowledge, she brings the decor.
She was probably really involved in the new space. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, all the decor is Liz.
Yeah.
I mean, she works with Chris Schramm, who's a local artist that does a lot of the finishes, but she picks the colors, she picks the carpets, the fabrics, the chairs, the, you know, just the general feel of the rooms of the restaurant is all her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I just think she's really just good for the staff, and keeping the staff upbeat, and excited about their job, and educating them about wine. And, you know, she's a total, I mean, her wine knowledge is, in my opinion, second to none. It's just,
yeah.
She's just, you know, she's willing to take chances with the list that I don't think most places are. You know, I mean, we have 30 Greek wines on our list.
Mm.
You know, there's
you know, I know it's kind of old school now for a lot of people, at least who like food, but not commonly, but I've been drinking a lot of the Moscow Falero. Like, I'm a big fan. It's just, it's such a good drinkable wine, and, So, yeah, that's good, I think.
Yeah, and we don't have it, here, it's a Mediterranean restaurant, so there's no California wines on the list.
Yeah.
Which everyone thought we were nuts. And, it's a tougher sell. It would be easier to say,
oh, here's a Chardonnay. Or,
yeah. Right. But people, I think, appreciate it, and it allows us to have more reasonable wine prices because it's not the marked up stuff from California, and so it works good for us.
Yeah, I went to Alinea for my anniversary in September, and I had a Slovenian wine, and I was like, I didn't even know Slovenia made wine, and it was unbelievable. It was so good, and it's like, there's just so much out there, and if you expose it,
Right. Yeah, science food's big in Chicago right now, huh?
It is. The thing I will say is that I think Grant Achatz does it in the spirit of the craft.
Right.
Like, he's not going to, throw a laser or do some crazy thing out there just to do it.
No, he's a chef. He's a chef first.
He's a chef first. And even, one of the things, at Modo, they've got a class 4 laser, which can burn holes in people, I think. But the one thing they are doing with it is they're vaporizing a vanilla bean. And apparently they tried to burn the vanilla bean to get, the vanilla essence. And they couldn't do it because it had too much carbon in it because it wasn't hot enough. But apparently the laser, what it does is it vaporizes the vanilla bean so that it goes straight from the solid form to a gaseous form. And they capture it in a wine glass. And then they pour in a Polyak, and apparently it's this just awesome vanilla-scented Polyak, which I haven't had, but I heard it's really good. Now, I think there's some question about whether they're doing it, if that's a science thing or not, but they said they couldn't do it. They tried experimenting, and this way they're able to get this, pure vanilla essence, so I don't know.
That's funny.
There's definitely, food as theater and
right.
But then again,
I'm just on such the opposite spectrum of that. It's always, I respect anything anybody does as a chef, because I always think there's progress. Everything I read about that I think is stupid, sometimes it still ends up, teaching somebody something about something.
There's a lot of chefs who probably would have said, what? He's got pierogies on his menu,
That. No, absolutely. I think too, though, it's like, I think unfortunately what happens for people like Grant, who does it the right way, there's 50 people or 100 people or 200 people, whatever they are, that will try to mimic what Grant does, but not have the training, not have the knowledge, and just hack it all up. Mm-hmm. And then someone will come into that restaurant and not his restaurant, but another restaurant, see it on the menu and have it, and it'll suck. And then they'll go there and they'll go, oh, I've had this before.
Yeah. Or they'll be like, oh, he's just doing tricky food like those guys over there, as opposed to, here's somebody who's very serious about
it. Right. I think that's where it happens. It's like, people always go to me, doesn't it piss you off that, every restaurant in the city has mac and cheese on their menu now, or lobster pro or whatever? I'm like, not at all. I go, I don't care. It's great. But the thing that stinks is when someone does it poorly. Because the average customer could go to wherever and have it, and they don't know where its origin came from, and they don't know where it originated from. So that's where it gets a little, scary.
Yeah, I think there's an Australian restaurant or something now that supposedly all their dishes are showing up are Grant's dishes.
Right.
Unfortunately, you can't patent it, It's
David Burke did.
Yeah?
Swordfish Chop.
Did he?
This is 15 years ago.
I didn't know that. I just met him, actually, a couple weeks ago, and I haven't eaten at his new... He opened the Prime House in Chicago, a week or two ago, and I hear it's great. That's
the
early buzz.
He's a treat, man.
It's funny because when I met him, he had his flavor sprays. He's like, hold out your hand, and I was like, what? He sprayed my hand with the bacon, and I was like, I was blown away because I was like, for the rest of the night, my hand smelled like bacon, and it was like I had bacon perfume. It was so funny, but that guy's crazy.
He's crazy. He is crazy. He's funny though.
And you know, they bought, I guess they have this, they bought this bull for the restaurant, so all their meat is coming off the genetics of this one bull. It's called, they call him Prime. And you know, just, yeah, it's definitely a different, you know, he definitely does some interesting stuff, so.
He's a neat guy.
If you knew, you could, you know, I don't know, you, I always joke you're on death row because, you know, it's a tough night on the line and you stab, like, Frankie or something like that. And, what you know, what would your last meal be? What would you have if you knew you could, it was going to be your last meal?
I'd probably have a pasta, like a perfect bolognese pasta.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the bolognese made with the pig's head and the whole, the real deal. That's probably what I'd have.
No, good.
Just that's a perfect pasta.
How about if you're throwing your own dinner party, who would you invite? And, you know, alive or dead, you know, people that you didn't get a chance to talk to that you might have been inspired by or would want, or, you know, people who are around now, you know, if you were inviting folks.
Well, I'd invite all my family and my staff, for sure. I'd invite, from a culinary standpoint,
yeah.
I would invite James Beard. I'd invite Julia.
Trent Reznor, Bill Jacobs.
I'd invite Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger.
I'd invite probably Jonathan Waxman, Paul Kahn. I'd invite Bobby and Mario because they're always fun. But yeah, the two people that aren't with us, I think, would probably be James Beard and Julia. Julia I've met.
Mm-hmm. What do you think you would ask James if you were talking to him?
You know, I would just ask him, like, what, you know, just kind of, I would just like to talk to him about his favorite things to eat, what he loved to cook, you know, why he loved to teach. You know, just kind of real basic questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing.
But, yeah.
What his favorite bottle
mostly
of wine
you just want to eat with him.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like those are the kind of people you just want to spend time with. I think food is about, you know, I always say that food for me is, it's even sometimes less about the food. It's the idea that it brings people together.
Right.
And it brings, you know, family.
Yeah,
and
I would just want to have people there that love to eat. I'd invite Michael Woolman just because of his just absolute passion of eating food.
He made me some confit pork belly today, and man, it was good.
Yeah.
It was really good.
He's, I mean, the guy just loves food. Mark Sherry, a chef that I worked for early in my career, same thing. Just loves to eat, loves food. I mean, those are the kind of people I'd like to be around, you know.
So you're still a young guy. I mean, you got the whole world in front of you. I mean, you're doing well.
Yeah.
What kind of vision do you have? Like, what kind of stuff do you want to do that you haven't done yet?
You know, I just want to keep growing. You know, I want to keep learning. You know, whether it's growing with more restaurants or not, is it really a necessity? You know, I certainly just want to continue to grow as a chef and a person.
Do you like the TV stuff?
I do. I didn't at first. It kind of grew on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I like about the TV? Because it gives you the opportunity to send a message. You know, so if you have a show, You know, I wouldn't do another show just to do another show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't do a show to send the wrong message kind of thing. And I think there's a lot of that.
5-minute meals.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of that now. So, but it gives you an opportunity to you know, affect a huge amount of people. You know, Emeril, love him or hate him,
mm-hmm.
he changed the way people think about food in America,
mm-hmm.
especially in mid-sized towns like Cleveland. You know, before, you couldn't go to the grocery store and get wild mushrooms and organic products and all those kind of things. So, you know, I think whenever you could have that kind of an effect on food in general or older people in general, then it's certainly worthwhile.
Doug was saying, he's like, now he's seeing, like, all these little kids coming in and asking for your autograph because of Iron Chef. And
yeah, it's weird.
I mean, know? I think that's kind of cool, though, because that does give you a chance to say, hey, you know, here, don't go to, you know, not that I'm not bashing McDonald's. But
no, but it's true. It gives you an opportunity to touch a younger generation about food and say, here's what's right and wrong. Here's why it's right and wrong, you know.
Would you do Iron Chef again? Did you enjoy that experience?
I would do it again. I would. Yeah, we had fun. You know, it was great because Frankie and Matt, who, you know, have been behind the scenes, one for 14 years and one for 9 years, now get to step out a little bit and get a little bit of face time. So that was cool.
Yeah, it was funny. I reread Soul of a Chef before I came out just to get some background. And I think one of my favorite parts of the whole book is how Roman calls Frankie the Cal Ripken of corn crates. That was genius. That was pretty funny. What would be your ideal secret ingredient if there was one?
Whole animal. I mean, either like a whole hog or a whole lamb.
Yeah.
You know, something of that nature. Like, I told them, I'm like, man, you know, we go against Morimoto, they hang up a whole beast, we'll kill them. I mean, it won't even be close, you know, but...
Unless it's a fish.
Yeah, exactly, but if it's a whole hog or a whole lamb or a whole, you know, steer, we'll destroy them. If it's a whole fish, we're in deep shit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, vegetable is kind of a middle ground, but...
Yeah, asparagus was tough.
Yeah.
I bet. Do you guys do a lot of your own butchering in here now, like breaking down?
Yeah, we always have. I mean, we've always, you know, done a lot of, you know, butchering and charcuterie, and I mean, we do more of the curing stuff now, but we've always done a lot of that kind of stuff. I just like working with the whole animal, using as much of it as I can, and I don't like beef tenderloin, and I don't like that kind of stuff. I don't like eating that kind of stuff. So
no, it doesn't have a lot of fat.
Doesn't have any flavor.
Yeah. I love braises.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a big fan of just breaking it down. You know, it's like taking the stuff that everybody calls junk or garbage and making it into.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like here, it's like our everything's like pretty. Let's see, for the meats, I've got veal breast braised, pork shoulder braised, lamb shank braised, chicken, whatever, confit. You know, we just don't use, you know, it's all, we got legs, shank, shoulder, and breast.
Yeah,
I mean, those are our cuts of meat.
Is that more intensive for you guys? I mean, you probably have to do more prep now.
Yeah, I mean, what is?
Yeah.
It is
your
what
restaurant.
What it is. I mean, it's easier, more prep time, but easier, you know, at service. It's easier to put the food up at service.
Cool. That's all I got, Mike. All
right, man.
I appreciate you doing this.
You bet.
You've been listening to Hungry Magazine from Chicago, Illinois. My name's Mike Nagrant, and thanks for listening.